Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about teaching. How will we teach our children going forward in the last part of the year 2020? And how can we create new schools, new ways of teaching children all throughout their school years? I would say pretty much from preschool all the way through college, maybe starting in the year 2021. How can we see that things really must change? We cannot go back to the old ways. We can't go back to the fork in the road and decide to take another exit just because we don't like where we are. Is it all about being comfortable or uncomfortable? Sometimes change is all about being uncomfortable and saying, I'd like to see where my creativity takes me today. But think about children in their younger years. They're full of creative world and wonder and everything, and they just can't get enough of the world around them. They want to know everything. Everything is a why project for them. Yet we tend to put them into schools, and we kind of keep them contained because this is what we want them to know. Check off the list, get to the bottom of the list, and hey, you've kept yourself between the parameters of the highway. You've gotten to where we need you to go, so now we will let you go out into the world. What if we took these same children and we now said, let's learn about a creative way of teaching going forward? Wow, I wonder what that might look like. Today, my guest is Adam Prosiv. He is a teacher, and he has been on the show before. We've spoken very extensively about how to be a great teacher. Well, today, Adam and I will be talking about how can we creatively look forward and see different ways to be able to share with our children new ideas and see them come to fruition. Adam, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Dr. Jeanette, and it's always a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. Adam, I think, you know, in divine timing, we look at it and we say, we've spoken before, and we said, we kind of would really like to see things shake up a little bit, and here we are in the middle of 2020. They've not only shaken up, they've kind of been spilled out, and I don't even know where the container is anymore, yes?
Yeah, that's correct, Dr. Jeanette. A lot of challenges out there at the moment.
Yeah. Do you think, Adam, that perhaps people are saying, I want to get back to normal. Do you think we'll ever get back to normal the way schools used to be?
No, I think schools, I guess with any passage of time, schools are always changing. I mean, education is always constantly changing. It's always evolving. I don't think there's ever a point where learning as a sense of, obviously with children at school for me and being a teacher, but I think learning even for ourselves as teachers has to be constantly evolving. It has to be constantly moving towards different mindsets, towards different challenges, and understanding how I feel education at the moment, as in any point in time, it doesn't have to be under any kind of world events or changes, is always evolving. It's like a massive energy, like I stated in my book, and that energy, it has to change. It has to evolve. It has to morph into something better and different all the time.
You know, it's really interesting. For so many decades as parents, we've all, you know, hey, when you get to a certain age, you go out the door. Your teacher will deal with you. She'll get what you need. She'll put it into you. And I kind of have to, you know, as parents, you could step away. In other words, it's not our job to. We teach children other things, but it was kind of like we left that part up to others. Now all of a sudden you look in the middle of 2020 and parents are saying, whew, you mean I have to teach my child something? I have to be able to take out a book and actually show them how to do something? And many times parents are saying, you know, I've had enough of this, I'm not going to do it. And they're not teaching their children at home. And still others, you look at children, you're saying, will they want to go back to school? Perhaps when the school's open again. Don't you think those two things right now in the middle of 2020 are playing out so viciously? And it's sort of like, oh my gosh, I don't know where this is going to shake out, yes?
Yeah, I think it's, I guess, current world events have definitely given parents a different perspective on education, as in how their part in it is played out. I think parents, right. I mean, it's easy to sort of obviously say in these days, you know, people have become maybe more insular, or maybe they've become more dependent on others to take in roles and responsibilities. And I guess thinking back to my own childhood, you know, my parents, we did a lot of things with me. My grandparents did a lot of things with me. I interacted with my aunties, my uncles, and different people. And I think if we go back, not that we want to go backwards in the sense of mindsets, but I think going back to that, you know, the whole village raises the child kind of thing.
Right.
Then we kind of look at how parenting has become probably, or the role of parenting has become more important in this age, I think. You know, even giving children a better sense of who they are, it comes from the people who you're most closely related to. And I feel parents, as a general rule, would probably come out of different events with a better perspective of valuing teachers and valuing other members of the community who are important to them. And I feel that education is, it's a non-stop process for everybody. I feel that, you know, if we thought about all the people that educated us, we'd have a long list, and it doesn't stop just at teachers exclusively. I think teachers are the guiding light for intensive education and learning, but I feel that the responsibility should be shared by everybody involved.
And it's also too important to state, Adam, the country that you are located in, because I'm in America, and I'll tell you, people can't wait to ship those kids off to school. And they're like, can you keep them a little bit longer? Do you have an after-school program? Maybe I'll come pick them up around 6 o'clock, you know, where you are in a different country and the way children are taught there is different, yes?
Well, it's interesting the way you just described the United States. It's pretty much the same here. We have a lot of kids. We do have after-school programs and before-school programs, which have always been around. I remember them being around when I was a child. And then we have holiday programs. Obviously, we have things, you know, kids can go away on things like your equivalent of summer camp and things like that. And I feel that, I mean, it's always a contentious issue being with parents seen as offloading their children, you know. I think that's always something that is very contentious, being that, you know, they'll say, you know, well, I've got my job and I've got to travel and I've got to go away, or I've got to do this or I've got to do that.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that I recall thinking about my own childhood, and my parents definitely had those options to travel for their jobs and, you know, work away and stuff like that. And I remember my dad saying once a story about a man telling him, no, stay, your work should be where your family is, and your family is where your heart is, and that's where you want to stay. And he, to his credit, my dad took that on board. And my parents, I mean, I was very blessed with my childhood. My parents were always around. Like, we went to, you know, we went to holiday care, and we, you know, we went to camps and stuff like that, and we loved it. And it's a great social social outlet for children. And parents do need time out from their children. It's not a question of, hey, you're, you know, neglecting your children, or you're ignoring your children by sending them to after-school care or before-school care or to camp or wherever. But I think there's a fine balance between putting your own needs forward as a parent, as in sort of things like career and stuff like that, and then really, really being serious about, you know, what it is you want to invest in your children, especially when I say to, I mean, I say to parents almost every day at school, you know, your time with your children is very short. You know, one day they'll be babies, you'll wake up the next day and they're leaving school and going to university or traveling or wherever, and value the time you have with your children, whether it be through things like homeschool, things like working through other challenges in the world, things like working through change, things like working through the introduction of, say, technology into education. And these things, like I say, it's a very short time, children's actual childhood.
Right. And you live in Australia, Adam?
I do, yes. Live in Cairns, Australia. It's a great place.
Yes. Well, you know, I think also, too, Adam, the idea is that many times people will say, hold on, I just lost my train of thought where I was going with that one. Oh, I know. But also, too, I think, Adam, now in the middle of 2020, that the schools are closed, and they say the school building is closed, but education has not stopped. However, a lot of children deeply depended on the schools for several things. One, they depended on them for education. Two, for social interaction. Three, they depended on them for their meals many times. Four, sometimes shelter, because they really, some kids, you know, had nowhere else to go in the daytime. And I think number five also, too, was medical care. All of these things were very important, and they are supplied by a school system in many different ways. And we don't even realize that once we tell the kids to stay home, they think it's just about the books. And when it's truly about all of these other social systems that are integrated into it, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel that that's all very true. And it's true as much as for the teachers and all the teacher assistants and school nurses and mm-hmm. admin staff, and I've had many discussions in the last couple of weeks. We had school holidays back early April, and we had 2 weeks off. And as much as teachers, we always look forward to our breaks. You know, I mean, that's a given. Being we work very hard during the term, and after the break, I mean, and this happens every break for me. I always feel that I'm ready to go back, that I love the interaction with the children, obviously. I love the interaction with my staff, the specialist staff that I work with. I work with within the health department of the school, and we have like the music department, the physical ed department, the gym department, the other languages departments, and they're great people, and I love interacting with them. And for us, it becomes a social hub as well, and forever mixing with parents and other members of the community, and like I said, all the support staff, and it becomes, I mean, essentially, I think, I feel the best thing for me within education as a teacher or as an educator as well is that they become, I mean, we spend so much time together, they become kind of like my second family. And mm-hmm. and even with children, we see them grow up, we go through every, you know, sneeze and cough and everything in between, and it's a great feeling to know that, I mean, I say to the children and the parents all the time, through any kind of challenge or obstacle that they're facing, I say, well, we're even though we're all in it together, in one sense, yes, we're all part of the school, but I love Cairns where I live because we're a very good community and people do support each other. There's nobody, if you need help with something, it can be anything. I mean, we had, you know, we have different challenges all the time with different world events or with local things or community things, and people just, you know, seem to come out of the woodwork and help each other. And I think that's always a good thing, you know, and the universe has always blessed me with support with whatever I've needed. I mean, you know, we spoke briefly before about divine timing, and right. I say to the children, divine timing is everything, you know, and it'll always be there. I mean, you have faith that through any challenge, whatever you need will be there. And if it's not there, you don't need it. You need to step up and maybe move through it in a different way and adopt a different mindset maybe.
Well, how do you think that children can be supported to get food if the family does not have food? In other words, like a lot of kids get breakfast, lunch, and sometimes a carry dinner. And even on Fridays, they would get meals for their weekend to take home. And now that schools are not pretty much in session, how are children finding food? I know in my area, There's a lot of drive-ups. You can drive up and you can get, you know, how many kids do you have? And you'll get enough food for 2 days. And on Friday, you'll get enough for the 3 days. Do you think, how do other areas tend to be able to feed children now that the school system is not doing that?
Well, I think that's, there's a lot of creative thought gone into that. I think even with current challenges, we have a school chaplain, and she's been unbelievably fantastic in her support for everybody. And as much as a chaplain, she's a counselor, a best friend, a confidant. She's about a, wears about 1,000 hats, and she was very instrumental early on. And she does this anyway. I think this is a 24/7 job for her, and she does it very well. Where she got in touch with some local charities, and they started a food bank at our school almost immediately. But like I said, we have quite a few natural disasters going like pretty much all year round here, and there's always a need for that call of, you know, who can we talk to, who can we get organized with, and she organized a fantastic food bank. I helped a little bit. I wouldn't say that I was instrumental in that, but other agencies and charities have really stepped up and supported people in so many ways, you know, offering people, lending each other cars and, you know, helping each other out community-wise. And the, like I said, it just, it goes nonstop. I mean, there's kids with challenges all the time. Like, we've had kids being diagnosed with cancer and things like that, and people have stepped up with sort of GoFundMe pages and donations and really supported parents because, you know, obviously, we had one child go down to the big base hospital in the, down south where we are, being we're only a fairly sort of smaller location, and the parents had to fly backwards and forwards several times. They had to put their jobs on hold, and the community stepped up and gave them a lot of support, and they appreciated it, and they're more than happy to give back. And getting back to the food thing, yeah, I think it's been fantastic. My mum, she lives down in Sydney, down in New South Wales, the sort of state underneath us. And she's been instrumental in supporting university students down there, a lot of international students who can't support themselves through current world events. And a lot of them can't return home, unfortunately. And she's been instrumental in supporting them with food vans and charities and really getting up and doing a great job. And I'm actually very proud of my mum for that. It's really given me a better sense of what I can do to really help others in every capacity, I think, you know. And then, and that's just like that paying it forward, the universe paying it forward once again.
Right. I think that truly this event has, you know, a lot of times, you know, as you've had disaster events in Australia, you know, I've had several here in New Orleans, people would always say on the news, oh, well, they'd look at it for a week or two, and then they were tired of it, and then they'd walk away from it. They'd come back a month or two, and they'd say, you still dealing with that? Are you crazy? You know what I mean? And it's sort of like out of sight, out of mind, and they don't really understand the concept of it. But I think this 2020 life event and health event that has really taken us to our knees is a global one. And I think, in a way, since it is global, it has really shaken everyone to start seeing how can you help others. So I think, in essence, we're really learning at all ages is how to care for humanity, how to have mercy, how to have compassion and kindness, and how to actually get up and support each other, not just for 1 day or 2 weeks. It's extensive. It's a greater amount of time. Don't you think that in a way this may change the social structure of how we care or help others? I mean, because if this event ends, are we all of a sudden going to say, oh, I got to get back to my job and my paycheck and see you later and then leave these people in a lurch? You know, someone's going to have to say, that's socially not acceptable to me, right?
Yeah, and like you said, I hope it does evoke change. I think I hope it evokes a sense of more responsibility to our world leaders. I feel that, I mean, I guess with our governments, especially in the Western world and in the First World, we have the best of everything. I mean, I thank my lucky stars every day, and I do. I actually meditate and give thanks and have been reliant on gratitude a lot lately and always am in a way. But I feel that our world leaders probably need to step up a bit more and focus on people and what their job is as far as serving people. I feel that, I mean, my family, my great auntie was in federal politics here many years ago, and several members of my family have run in different elections, both locally and through the state and federal governments here in Australia, and been candidates, and I've seen a lot of things. And as much as it's easy to complain about governments and world leaders, I find that, you know, events shake up people, but maybe give them a better sense of they're there to serve. I feel that sometimes when people get to the top, it's very easy to become self-entitled, and perhaps sometimes it's very easy to feel that you've worked your way to a position of power, which is not a bad thing, but I feel that the power also comes with a huge responsibility. And at the same time, it's about giving people opportunity. And as a teacher, that's my sole purpose, is to create as much opportunity for my students as possible in every capacity. And I feel that that's the best thing that I can do, is to be a good role model to all of those I come in contact with, and be the best person I can be. I mean, it sounds very simplistic, and it almost sounds a little bit airy-fairy, but I say to the children at school, that's the whole point, is it's kind of become airy-fairy, because, not saying people don't do it, I mean, there's people around the world doing fantastic things all the time, you know, charities and volunteers and people stepping out of their comfort zones to help others in all kinds of ways, regardless of whether we're having natural disasters or any other kind of world events which are changing the scene. But like you said before, I do hope that people don't just come out of this event or any event saying, oh, yeah, we're done, let's move on, yeah, okay, we got through it, aren't we wonderful? And like you said, because some people, like we had the bushfires back in January here in Australia, and people are still struggling with that.
Right.
And we have, every year we have cyclones and or what you call hurricanes, and people are still adjusting from those. We've had quite a few different parts of our country be devastated. Like you guys had you've had several tornadoes as well over the last couple of months. And it's, yeah, these people don't just adjust overnight. You know, they live in trailers or caravans, as we call them, and the community really has to sort of, you know, rebuild from scratch sometimes. And I'm hoping, yes, that people can continue to support each other and step out and have a more, not a worldly mindset, but maybe a more giving mindset to everybody as much as they possibly can all the time. I mean, I admire people like Oprah Winfrey and all the great work she's done over the years. And she says it's interesting because of all the things she's done, the best thing she's ever remembered was the giving. She says to give is the thing that brings you that. It's like, it's hard to describe. It's like a sense of being the best version of yourself. And as much as some people do have a lot to give, and that's great, and other people don't, but you give within the capacity that you can, and no small amount of help or money or support is ever left unrewarded. I mean, there's always a better sense of pulling together and creating a great community or a great society, and hopefully through every challenge that we ever come across, we could continue to get reminded of that. I feel it's like the universe's way of saying, hey, well, you're in everything together. It's not just a one-off event. It's not just any event. It's everything, you know, day in, day out, you know.
Let's talk for a second also, Adam, about when schools do start back, the concept of everyone child must wear a mask from very young to all the way up through college, and the idea of social distancing. How can schools still survive with that type of a paradigm? You know, schools have already been overcrowded. Colleges already are very tight, you know. They pack a lot of kids into a small area to be able to keep their overhead down. And I'm not really sure how that's going to work out. Do you?
Yeah, now that's a great question, Jeanette. And I was just thinking about that as you were saying it, thinking,
yeah.
I feel there's no easy answer to that one. I mean, it's interesting that, you know, children, especially younger children, obviously I teach, you know, small children and
right.
primary school, elementary students.
How's
and
that
going to
work out?
Well, by a natural course, like when we, for example, when we come back from our school breaks, our school holidays and Christmas holidays and stuff like that, every year the first thing they want to do is interact and,
correct.
You know, hug each other and play games and wrestle, mm-hmm. and that's what kids do, and it's great to see, mm-hmm. and obviously they're very, very keen to socialize and, you know, find out what their friends have been doing, and I don't know the answer to that. I mean, like even what you said with the masks and wearing masks, I mean, it was interesting that some teachers at our school put that suggestion forward, being we've still got kids who are coming to school, all the essential workers, mm-hmm. Doctors, nurses, police officers, they are still sending their children to school, even though it's a very small number. Mm-hmm. And I said, it's interesting, not that I've never refused to wear a mask, but I said, well, we are still teaching. And mm-hmm. it's very difficult for kids to hear you if you're talking into a mask.
Yeah.
They can't see your mouth, especially the younger students, because they rely on, I'm forever doing grammar and vocabulary and, you know, things like that and phonetical mm-hmm. Correction with them nonstop. And that's a difficult question because the children would face the same challenge. I mean, they want to talk to each other and hear each other. And I feel that, I mean, it's like a very complex situation, being that the lockdown has been given sort of, in one sense, indefinite status, so the timeline is not definite, but at the same time, things like mental health and social interaction play a huge part in our lives, in everyone's life, and I feel that that's, you know, a very difficult decision for obviously the world leaders is to find a balance of, I mean, they talk about in Australia rolling out of reopening of businesses and things like this and gyms and you know, cafes. And I feel
right.
that it's a complex issue because, yeah, you don't want people. Well, I think they don't want people. The biggest thing is they don't want people to be complacent. I think they find
mm-hmm.
that, I think it's this, I mean, the longer, it's a bit like, I mean, this sounds a bit strange, but it's like the longer you have to wait for something, you know, maybe like Christmas time and when you're a kid, that sort of thing, or you're waiting to, you know, finish university, or you're waiting to, you know, meet the right person, like as in a soul partner. It, quite often, the longer you wait, the more it tests your faith. I found that my faith in myself has been tested a lot with a lot of different issues, not just current world events, but I find that that's the best part, and getting back to that timing, that divine timing, is that comes up in my life time and time again, as much as that sounds strange. And I say to the students, I mean, a lot of students, you see them, I mean, you know, we see them around town here, being that this is not a big city, it's a small city, but it's, you know, everyone sees everyone, and we're allowed to go to supermarkets and different places at different times, I find that, you know, I think that's the hard part is, you know, waiting is not a bad thing as long as you know what you're waiting for. And
right.
with my own life, like I said, there's, you know, different things to wait for, and sometimes the wait is worth it, providing you know that you have everyone's well-being at heart.
Because here in the U.S., schools have been closed, you know, for they were just plain closed down in February. And in March, and says, that's it, don't come back to school again. And already they are talking about, you know, when they go back to school again in August, about that every child will wear a mask every single day to school, and all teachers will wear masks, and there will be social distancing. And we're going, I don't see how that is going to work. And even the college here, you know, Louisiana State University, LSU, there was they had already put up their markers. Yes, we will open in August. Yes, everybody will wear a mask. Yes, there will be social distancing. And, you know, I went and I posted, I said, well, good luck getting a date or having a social interaction, you know, or being with roommates. Because, you know, that's part of the culture of, you know, going to college, and they didn't even dare talk about daycares or younger children yet. It's almost as if, are we just going to hold them back for a year maybe and wait and see what happens? Because how can you even have that interaction? I'm not sure if they're maybe looking at the school systems from the top down first, you know, instead of saying, let's just jump in and send everybody to school. So I think it'll be interesting to see in the year 2020 what happens to education. What will happen to a regular school? Will there be maybe different schedules or maybe different ways of teaching? Or will they just go to school maybe 1 or 2 days a week and do the rest online or whatever it might be? I think there's so many different creative ways there. I don't think we'll ever go back to how school used to be in 2019. Do you?
Yeah, I think current events have definitely awakened us to different options of education.
Right.
I think it's interesting that because we have a high school across the road from our primary elementary school, and a lot of those students have been doing what they call distance ed, which mm-hmm. it's interesting when you get to your final couple of years of high school, like we call them grade 11, grade 12. A lot of those students, and this has been going for several years now, they have what they call a flexible schedule. So they do a lot of things from home, and they have selective classes throughout the week. And it's interesting that kind of teaching has been very successful with these students integrating mm-hmm. into the community with things like apprenticeships and getting jobs and that sort of thing.
Right.
And I feel that when I actually saw that happening initially, I thought, what a great idea, being I wish they had that when I was at school, because we were, you know, 24/7 at school, behind the mm-hmm. desk, you know, being instructed. And like you said, I think education has to evolve in a very different direction from now, because,
right.
like I said, I think even with things like integrating people into the community and people being our students, obviously, mm-hmm. I think it's a process that really has to be not overhauled in the sense of everything is wrong with it, but really rethought, as in everything doesn't have to be the way it's ever been. I mean, it's the great thing about education is it's always resilient, and the students are always resilient. I feel that if people sort of come out of any event saying, I mean, for example, we have the bushfires in Australia, and a lot of students lost schools and things like that, and
mm-hmm.
they've really had to step up with things like homeschool. So
yeah.
that became the priority to keep their education going. But then essentially there's also we have a very popular, I mean, I'm not sure whether they do this in the United States, but a lot of people, especially when their children are a bit younger, they pull their kids out of school for a year. And they buy a trailer, a caravan, as we call it, and they drive around Australia. We call it the Big Lap. And being Australia is a huge country, they take a year off, and the parents often work in different places and just travel, you know. And their children do homeschool, so they do internet learning, and you can do different types of interactive. You can take work packs with you, and the kids can do the work as they go, this sort of thing.
Right.
And that's a great idea, because I feel...
Not here.
you know, yeah, well, the kids learn so much.
Yeah.
I mean, children learn from things like travel. They learn from things like new experiences, and I feel that schooling needs to step back into, or step out, I should say, into a more, you know, encompassing approach. I mean, like in things in Finland, for example, I remember reading many years ago an article where they did a lot of orienteering with their primary school kids, the younger kids, and it was all, you know, part of the school curriculum, these kids. And they did it in the middle of winter. Like, they send these kids out in their little snow suits and give them a compass, and, you know, and they're all partnered up in these teams, and off they went. And
right.
I thought, what a great experience. You know, the kids are out there relying on each other as much as relying on teachers. You know, I think that teachers play a very important part. Obviously, being a teacher, I'm always going to say that. But I think the kids themselves not need to take more responsibility, but have the capacity to take responsibility for their learning. I mean, I'm thinking that children, I think they're more resilient than we give them credit for. I remember my own childhood. we never stop learning. You know, if we had a time off for anything, like a weekend or a holiday, we were, you know, off on an adventure, riding our bikes, you know, going to creeks and looking at things and finding things. And as much as current events have restricted people's movement a lot, there's still things like, you know, you've got projects you can do with your garden or with plants or with, you know, collecting bugs. Or, I mean, kids never stop doing that as a natural way of curiosity, and that never stops regardless of where you live. I mean, there's always something to absorb. I mean, even my mum was saying, I mean, she was a teacher for many years as well, and she's online talking to different people about different things nonstop. And she said, even staring out your window and observing what you see and then maybe making a sketch and doing an observation about how you can really absorb that information. And a lot, because a lot of people, I think, maybe perhaps people don't absorb as much as they used to, or they don't see things. Like you're saying, our lives are very busy, and current events have really, I feel, you know, probably put it to everybody to sort of slow down, take inventory of our own goals and our own lifestyles, and how can things be different, you know. And
right.
And there's no set rules. I think even if they say, you know, come back to school for 2 days a week, then that's what school is. And then if they say, hey, we're going to do a flexible schedule, then that's what school is. Or if they say, I mean, I think even with the mask wearing thing, I think it's an option that they have to weigh up. And as much as that, it could be successful, it might not be successful. But I think it's about trying different things, given how much information we have at the time. You know, I think it's like the information that we keep getting about different things, or anything, is always open to change. It's always open to a different interpretation. I mean, and I think that, you know, I say to my students all the time, hey, we were going in this direction based on this information. Now the information has changed. We need to change direction. And if I give them clear instructions about the whys and the hows, generally we don't have a problem. And that's with anything. I'm doing that nonstop, isn't it? And I'm quite happy to admit my mistakes as a teacher. I don't ever feel that I've always made the right decision or always made the right call, being, you know, things always change. And I'm happy to admit that to my students. If anything, like I wrote in my book, that brings more respect to my students, because they know that I'm more flexible in my approach to everything with education, and always am. I think it's something that I think every teacher really needs to step back and think, how can they change their approach? Like you were saying, how can they change mm-hmm. the way they see education, or the way they see their students, or the way they see their school, or the way they see their colleagues, or the way they see their admin staff or support staff? Because I think right. it's very easy to become insular, and very easy to become too independent and too self-sufficient, whereas essentially we're all in this together. We're all in everything together.
Well, I think also, too, Adam, is the idea is that when it comes up time for school, do kids want to go back to school? But I think there's also a bigger question here that a lot of people may have been putting to the back of their mind, and they don't really want to let it come forth and even breathe a word of it. And it's, do teachers really want to come back to the classroom in droves? Because a lot of teachers here in the U.S. have had very difficult classrooms. Kids are very violent. Kids, you've got troubled kids almost every single day. Sometimes teachers say they feel like they've been beaten up every single day, you know, and they get home and they're like, can I just get to tenure, you know? And a lot of times they say, what am I doing this for? So I think the idea is that sometimes in online classes, it may seem a little bit easier. And some people say, well, that's escapism, because now you're not helping those kids who really need the help, those who might not be online, those who might not have a computer, those who in class you might be able to touch and really help. So I think there's a whole lot of controversy there is, yes, we understand kids may or may not want to come back, but what about the teachers? Do they really want to come back or not? Some will, some won't, and I think there's going to be a great big shakeup when the realization about what am I getting myself back into when I have a doorway to maybe not go back, right?
Yeah, I think teaching, as much as education, will always bring new challenges. I think online learning is a new challenge. I think that's something that has solved several issues, but then unfortunately has created more issues with things like,
right,
you know, kids spending too much time on screens and stuff like that. And I think that's the hardest thing, is being even a teacher, but being humans, I found that in my experience in life, we unfortunately solve many problems, and then unfortunately we create a lot of other problems based off that, which is a very difficult kind of situation. But I feel I remember many years ago that one of my best friends said to me, he said, if you've got it all together in your life, then
right,
that's a sign that you should start worrying even more.
Right.
I think that's the hardest thing. I mean, you know, like you were mentioning violent children and,
yes,
and students and people who need support. I think that's the hardest thing is, you know, some people may not come back to teaching. Some people may choose different avenues for their life, and that's fine. I think that, you know, there'll always be something that will come along, whether it be a world event or a natural disaster or a life-changing health issue or something like that. And it's amazing. The hardest thing is to, or most difficult thing is to, look at anything as a teacher and say, oh, I wanted this to happen, as in this direction to be fulfilling and rewarding and all that sort of stuff, and then to turn around and say, hey, it didn't happen based on whatever, but how can I kind of move through that? I mean, I have to remind myself of that almost every day as a teacher. It's not, I mean, I wouldn't say that I go to school open-minded about everything. I mean, there are things that I've been set in my ways about, but then the best part is, as long as I'm really focused on, like I said before, issues like gratitude and being thankful for my job as a teacher and being thankful for all the wonderful things that has brought, but it's like it's brought a lot of challenges, which have been just as wonderful with their outcomes. And that's a crazy thing, I think. I read in a book somewhere, I can't remember where I read it, I read so many books, and I've read a lot lately, that goals, or actually blessings and challenges, are one and the same thing. I mean, it's great to have blessings, and we love blessings, and they're wonderful things in our lives, but the blessings can't happen without the challenge. And the challenge at the moment is to maybe reinvent ourselves as a community,
mm-hmm,
as a society, as a nation, as a species, and think about, you know, things like, going back to online learning, you know, what benefits can we take away from that? And then what other challenges can we learn from? And then how can we move through things like supporting children and older students through different changes in education, through different mediums of education? It's always ongoing. I think that's like you said before, we're just going back to that. Let's be grateful for the things we do have. I mean, if I ever,
mm-hmm,
feel ungrateful in my life, I step up and think about, you know, basic things like, you know, I have two legs, two arms, two eyes, two ears, and I'm very grateful for that. And that's a basic thing that I love. And then I give thanks for my job and thanks for the children that I've taught, and I give thanks for the challenging students, because there's no shortage of them, and they will always come along and allow you to really think about issues and think about how can you think outside the box. And I was actually saying to one of my students the other day, we were talking at school, and I said the best thing is the challenges come in some ways which you've never even thought of and you don't have a solution for. And the best thing is to really, and not think hard about the solution, but sometimes you've got to actually just give the solution to God, to the universe, and allow it to happen naturally, and to allow the answers to come in their own time. I mean, that's the value of hindsight, is to look back and really allow ourselves to say, hey, yeah, I worked through that challenge or I worked through that issue, but it opened me up to more creative ways of of seeing myself and seeing for myself, seeing my teaching, seeing education, seeing interaction, seeing how we support each other. And yeah, it's just it's an ongoing process.
Right, because I think a lot of times too, and just touching on this in closing, is that a lot of kids have been also bullied pretty much in school. And a lot of kids may say, I'm done with it. You know, I want to find a different way. So I think there's going to be a lot of solutions. And I think there's going to be a lot of creativity in the end of 2020 in how we look at school. And I think it's going to be maybe, it's almost going to be, let's just test it out. Like, there's going to be a lot of testing. And maybe not until 2021 or 2022 will we find something that we can settle into that kind of works for everyone. So I think that if we can accept that there's no set pattern, just as finding, you know, an answer for a disease or finding a solution to a problem or finding something to block a disaster or a health condition, you know, it's always about testing things. We test this and see if it works. You know, what percentage did it work, and take part of it and build something else. So I think the school system is almost looking at, right now it's a time of saying, okay, we had an implosion, and what can we build from this? That's really what we're talking about today, is how can children be creative, how can teachers be able to form something differently, and how can parents help bring all of this together, because we all need to learn, and how is that going to be accomplished, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's I think that's with any world event, like I said before, or issue or challenge, I feel it's God and the universe's way of saying, I need you to be aware of this. I think it's allowing us to, you know, really look within ourselves and find that part of ourselves which, you know, may be reticent or unwilling to change or fearful.
Right.
And how we can overcome that. I think that's a lifelong process. I don't feel that we ever get to any point where, well, and I pray that I don't ever get to any point for myself as a teacher, as a person, where you know everything or you've overcome everything, because you haven't, and or I haven't. And yeah, no, I think it's as much as, you know, a lot of things in life are not fair or don't appear to be just, but essentially, you know, with anything, I think it's set to challenge us, and once again, it's something that is part of our lives constantly. I don't think, you know, I think it's, you know, like I said, if we consider the very basics of gratitude and counting our blessings, you know, I could for myself start with a thousand things, and I think that overrides the not so ideal things and gives me a better perspective of how I can not influence others, but how I can kind of be a guiding light or a better role model to how people perceive things. I mean, and that's the hardest thing, I think, you know, in life.
Absolutely.
We're sent here to bear with each other and understand each other and love each other. And the more that we can do that, the better the world will be.
Yeah, I think we got kind of complacent and a kind of disconnect. Time to connect back in again, yes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Adam, it was such a pleasure to have you with us today. Could you share with the listeners how to find out more information about your work? That would be wonderful.
Yeah. My website is adamprociv.com, A-D-A-M-P-R-O-C-I-V, all one word, all lowercase, at Hotmail. You can send me a thing. And like I said, my website's .com, yes. I got that mixed up with my email. Sorry about that. And you can look up my book, How to Be a Legendary Teacher. It's online. It's for sale. It's just got different ideas about education and life and teaching. And the best part is a lot of teachers have read it and loved it, but then a lot of other people have read it and loved it too, a lot of doctors and nurses and lawyers, and they said they've got a lot of great ideas about that, about what they're facing through that. And like I said, we're all lifelong learners, and that's a great thing.
Absolutely. Well, Adam, it was such a pleasure to have you with us today. We thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Jeanette. It's always an absolute pleasure to be on your show, always. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. If you'd like to find out more information about Adam Procev, again, his link is on the bottom of today's show page. Click there and go directly to his website for more information and to be able to find out about his book. And it truly is about being able to say, in the year 2020, how will we rise? I think we're going to be crawling a little bit more, maybe collecting ourselves, maybe taking time to sit and rest and reflect and see in retrospect what worked, what didn't, and maybe be able to gather our little stones of creativity, because 2021 will be ready at the doorstep before you know it. And how are we going to rise like the phoenix in 2021? Be able to set that as our sights and say we're going forward. We'll get there all together. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Until tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.